If someone suffers from chronic pain, it's natural to turn to some relief from some medication. And generally speaking, over the short term, that's probably a good thing. But when it becomes a long-term addiction, we see problems with that. Recently, of course, we saw the death of actor Philip Seymour Hoffman, 46 years of age. He had battled with addiction when he was young and had, I guess, relapse might be the right word. We'll talk a little bit about that and pain management. We have three people with us here today. I'd like to introduce first Dr. Jim Shames is with us, and he is the medical director for Jackson County Health and Human Services. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Dr. Ann Alftine is here as well, and you are the director of clinical strategy at Jackson Care Connect.
That's correct.
And
Thank you.
And we'll talk a little bit about what Jackson Care Connect is as well. And then also joining us this morning is Michelle Maricos. And Michelle, you had some addiction issues that stemmed out of some chronic pain. Is that correct?
Yes, medical issues and medication dependency.
Right. And then you got some help with that as well.
Yes.
Well, Dr. Alftine, we'll start off with you. Tell us a little bit about some of these organizations. I guess I should preface this by saying, I suppose as long as there has been prescription pain medications, there have been people who have abused them. But it seems like in recent years, people have become very dependent upon medication sometimes to treat chronic pain. And it seems like there's been a spike in that recently. Am I correct in that?
You are correct in that. And this is the story we're here to kind of tell. To step back a little bit, like you're saying, what is a coordinated care organization, and you know, who am I in that part of the story? I want to give a little bit of background to folks to kind of preface the story. Jackson Care Connect is a coordinated care organization, and it's one of three in Jackson County. And coordinated care organizations bring together physical health, mental health, addiction services, and dental health, and make it easier for Oregon Health Plan members to get the care that they need. It's really important that you understand that a coordinated care organization focuses on prevention, but also on caring for chronic conditions like diabetes or chronic pain. And the CCOs have three real goals. We want to improve patient experience, we want to decrease the cost, and we want to improve the quality of care. So it's important that organizations like Jackson Care Connect coordinate with the organizations in healthcare in our region to improve the quality of care. And one of the ways that we've done that is to work with a group called the Opioid Prescribers Group. And the Opioid Prescribers Group is one of the Jackson Care Connect funded projects, and we were working with the other CCOs in the region to support this group. And they have done great work in dealing with and raising awareness about what chronic pain management and standard of care for chronic pain management is. And in addition to that, we also look at the addictions component to that. So it's really important for folks to know what a coordinated care organization is, who it serves, and that addiction services are covered, a covered benefit for folks, as well as chronic care management.
And so you talk back and forth as needs arise for a particular individual and help them with their treatment plan.
Exactly.
Dr. Shames, you're involved with the Opioid Prescribers Group as well.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about what that is doing.
Well, you have to go back a couple of decades, maybe three, to a time when we weren't using opioids so much for chronic pain. Hopefully we were appropriately using them when people got hurt or people were at end of life. But there's been an evolution, as I said, over the last 20 or 30 years to increasingly use painkillers, opiate-based drugs, for pain in large doses for large periods of time. And I think there's lessons that were learned over the last thousands of years about how powerful these drugs are, how they can control our lives. And we kind of suspended that for a while. And so where we're at now is we are prescribing very large amounts of painkillers. And for some people, it really turns their lives around. It's a wonderful thing. But I think we need to be a whole lot better, we being the prescribing community, at identifying when we're prescribing too much, when we should be slowing down, when we should just use the meds for a short period of time so people don't get in trouble. Because some folks, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, are predisposed to misusing substances. And if you make it readily available to them, they get in trouble, and sometimes they die.
For either one of my doctors here, I want to ask this question. Is it tough or is it hard for a doctor, especially with the limited amount of time that physicians sometimes have to see a patient, is it hard to make an assessment as to whether someone is going to easily move away from pain medications once their acute issue is resolved, or that they have an opportunity, I shouldn't say opportunity, but they might become addicted to pain medications? Is that a tough call to make?
You know, it's not really that tough. What I think we need to do is to sit down and realize how important it is when you make a decision about prescribing these meds and do a full assessment. And if you ask the right questions of folks and you have the right tools in front of you, I think you can often tell who has a history that might put them at risk, and then you should be cautious with those folks.
I know just last week I was at my primary care physician for a routine checkup, and I noticed a sign on the wall that I'd never seen before, and I can't quote it verbatim, but it basically said, if it's your first visit, we're not going to give you pain medications. Now, I assume if a chart had been sent over, then that would be a different story, but I just noticed that, and I've never seen that before on the wall that I can recall, and I'm wondering if that's part of the education process, that because obviously doctor shopping is a big problem with this, isn't it?
I think we all need to establish some basic guidelines. I'm referring to to us, the prescribers, because that's where the problem lies. I mean, these are medications that didn't come off the boat from Colombia and didn't come up the I-5 corridor from Mexico. They come from your local prescribing providers. And so we have to figure out what the best practices are. And one of those best practices is what you mentioned, which is somebody with chronic pain showing up for the first time in your office, you probably are not going to have enough information to really know if it's wise to continue or not.
If you'd like to join our conversation today, anywhere in the listening audience, 1-800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Michelle, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your story, so be thinking about that. And if you have any questions for our doctors or our guests today, be sure to give us a call here at the Jefferson Exchange. Talking today about dependency on prescription painkillers, I'd like to reintroduce my guest, Dr. Jim Shames, who's the medical director at Jackson County Health and Human Services, Dr. Ann Alftine, who is the director of clinical strategy at Jackson Care Connect, and also with us today is Michelle Marikos, who is here to tell us about her personal experience. I said I'd put you on the spot, so tell us what happened. You had some chronic pain issues, is that right?
Yes. In 2003, I had an accident. It was not a car accident. I was pushed off of a porch and landed on my head, crushed 3 of my vertebrae in my neck, and it turned into a chronic pain situation, and I was on medication for 10 years. So I was on the hamster wheel like many people and didn't know what or how to get off the medication or what it was going to be like. How am I going to be able to live? It's the most afraid I've ever been to get off of those medications because I didn't know what my life was going to look like.
And were these opioid medications?
Yes.
And so what did you do?
I went to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and did a pain management program and was tapered off the medication. And it was a great experience. It was wonderful.
When you say a pain management program, what were the components of that?
We did physical therapy. We did occupational therapy. We did group therapy. So the day was set up that you're with the same group all throughout the day. That all different ages, all different types of pain. And we just learned about pain, how it affects our bodies, how it affects our brains, how to use different techniques and skills to manage our pain without the medication.
And where are you today?
I am medication free. So it's been a great experience, and I'm living instead of surviving with chronic pain.
And do you still have some chronic pain issues, but you have some different tools to cope with
those? I have different tools, different skills to use to manage the pain, but I will always have chronic pain. There's no cure for chronic pain. We wish there was, but there just isn't.
We have a caller on the line. This is Mark in Reading. Go ahead, Mark.
Thank you. I have a question and also a comment. My question is diphenoxylate / atropine / MYL an opiate?
Dr. James?
Doesn't sound like it. I'm not sure what that is, though.
It's used as an anti-diarrheal.
Yeah. Yes. That sounds about right.
It's not an opiate?
No, it's not.
Okay. Many years ago, I was in the hospital for 4 solid months. And during that period of time, I was given 50 milligrams of Demerol IV every 3 hours for 8 weeks. I was, of course, extremely physically addicted to it. But somehow I managed not to become psychologically or whatever addicted to it. So I haven't had to continue using it over the years. So I just want to mention that not everyone that becomes physically addicted to these drugs is stuck with being psychologically addicted to them.
All right. Thanks for your call, Mark.
You bring up a good point, Mark, and I think it's maybe helpful at this point to clarify that everybody will become physically dependent if they take enough opioids for enough period of time. That is to say, you'll get sick, very sick, when you stop. Now, that's not the same as addiction. Addiction would be when you are obsessed with the use, you start doing whatever it takes to get the drug, and you misuse them. And I think that it's not a clear line between dependence and addiction, but we often confuse the terms, and I think it's helpful to... And I like to avoid in a discussion like this the term addiction anyway, because, you know, it characterizes folks in a way when in fact there's a lot of people struggling with trying to get off the meds or use the meds moderately, when in fact they're very dependent and it's hard for them. They're uncomfortable. Their pain increases when they try and reduce the dose.
Dr. Alftin, I wanted to ask you, you're involved in coordinating a lot of this. And when a patient either comes to you or is referred to you, I'm not sure how that process starts out, but they want to get off their pain medications. Do you do an assessment with that patient initially to try to define which agencies that are available here in Southern Oregon would be the most beneficial? How do you customize their treatment program?
That's a great question. So customizing in somebody's treatment program is really important and gets to the crux of the issue. Let me just differentiate. So my role with the coordinated care organization is a health plan, and health plans help to pay for the providers that care for the patients. And so a primary care provider is able to take a patient like that in their office and do an assessment. And Jim Shames can actually talk more about what that assessment is and how that works. But the important part is that the coordinated care organization like Jackson Care Connect actually helps to pay for not just the physical health care, but any sort of mental health services, behavioral health services, addictions if it's needed, so that patient can get the care that they need. So
in the past, there's been a reluctance, hasn't there, for payment for, I guess we used to call it, I don't know if we still do, called it alternative medical treatments. Is it still referred to as that?
That's a broad category, yes.
Yes, I thought so.
But it's really important that the primary care doctor can be trained to do an assessment for people with chronic pain and get them to the services that they need. I think Jim can probably speak more to that component of it in the pilot that Jackson Care Connect has funded.
Right. So, you know, the question would be, if not opiates, then what? Right. And I think that Michelle brings up a really good point, which is what really helped her learn to manage her pain were behavioral health components, things that didn't come in a pill bottle and didn't come at the end of a needle, but they really were learning new strategies, sort of learning her own inner strength around this issue. And I wonder, Michelle, if you could say a little bit about kind of, you know, how you're participating in some of the further work in the community around that.
Well, we are starting a peer-to-peer support group. It's going to be at the YMCA in Medford. It's going to be every Wednesday from 3:30 to 5, beginning April 2nd, and it's completely free. It is supported by Jackson Care Connect, and we're just going to do a support group and work with what we have in our community.
Do you use things like yoga and acupressure and massage and jogging? I don't know what all's on the list. Biofeedback. What all do you use to try to once you're off the medications and let's say you're having a bad day with some pain, what tools do you use?
I use pretty much a gamut of those things. Biofeedback was funny because I didn't know what it was in the very beginning, and I thought it's foo-foo fee-fee, but it was great. It's really, it's a great thing to use, and it really does help calm your body down because when you are in such grave pain, you get tense. All of your muscles tense. And to be able to calm yourself down on your own without medication, it really is a skill that everyone needs to use even without pain.
And I'm wondering, Michelle, when you think about these peer groups and how that helps you with your chronic pain and who would go to these peer groups too, I think that's really an important component of this, how that's a part of treating chronic pain.
Anyone that has any kind of chronic pain, also people that are supporting people with chronic pain, the caregivers, husbands, wives, grandparents, anyone that's affected by chronic pain.
We have a caller on the line from Talent. Paul, go ahead, Paul.
Yes. You know, it would be my contention that primary care physicians are the least likely to be able to properly address this. They have economic incentives, both in the form of their licensure that keeps them under diagnosing and treating with proper medication. My personal life experience has been that not only in pain medication, but also in all medications, that primary care physicians are not qualified, but often are adversely incented not to prescribe at the proper dosages to alleviate either the pain or the symptoms of chronic conditions. They want you to keep coming back to them and monitoring, but in effect, their monitoring system is completely ineffective, and that creates a condition in which people, in trying to seek some remedy for their painful situations, go outside the bounds of medicine and go like Philip Seymour Hoffman, go to illicit drugs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that primary care is the problem, not the solution.
Dr. Altini, would you like to take that?
Well, I can definitely start. I think, Paul, that's a really interesting point, and I think you've got some really good concerns. One of the things that we found when we did the pilot program of talking to the primary care doctors about treating chronic pain was that there was some, there's a new standard of care about how we treat chronic pain, and not everything is understood as well as it could be about chronic pain and how it works and how opioid medications can help or hurt folks in that realm. So one of the things that Jackson Care Connect has done is funded a pilot to work with a behavioral health specialist and Dr. Shames and some other coordinators to go into the primary care offices and help educate about what chronic pain is, what addiction is, what opioids are best used for, and what the new standard of care is right now. So it's an evolving thing.
You know, my experience with primary care docs, and I am one and was actively practicing as one, is that the motivation is as you would want it to be. I think folks are really motivated to want to help patients. That's why they got into the field. But, you know, there's a lot of pressures of time. There is influence by pharmaceutical companies. I think that's part of what we're dealing with here, is that we were kind of sold a bill of goods, and now we have to reverse course, relearn some new skills. But I think it is the appropriate place, because if you think about it, chronic pain is a human condition. It happens to everybody, and it gets worse as you get older. That's just the way it is. And so primary care providers and their patients need to grapple with that. And I think my point is that you go down the rabbit hole of chronic opioids, and for some people, you can get in trouble. And I think back to the doing an appropriate assessment, figuring out the right folks who need medication, get it in the right dose, and monitoring things closely so they don't get out of hand.
And to add to that, Jim, I think you're exactly right. Primary care is a really good place for folks with chronic pain, and especially as we're moving towards more team-based care. So the primary care provider knows a lot about medicine and medical models, and when we work with other team members, whether it's a pharmacist or a behavioral health specialist or a coordinator, they can bring their talents and their skill sets to the treatment of chronic pain. So primary care is becoming more and more the best place for people to start with, especially around chronic pain.
Are doctors in general and primary care physicians in particular more open in recent years about alternative pain management than maybe, say, an earlier model where here's a pill, have a good day?
I think that it's evolving. You know, as the primary care doctors are really trying to work with this new standard of care and work with these patients with chronic pain, they do want to do the best they can for their patients. That's just the natural motivator. And so when they get the tools and other supports to treat patients, then they use them. So part of this is about education. What are the other alternative methods that really support patients with chronic pain?
A caller had a question here. Specific question about how safe is tramadol, if that's the correct way to say it, and getting off of that particular drug.
Well, tramadol is theoretically a non-opioid painkiller, and people are using it increasingly, hoping that they can avoid some of the side effects of opiates. People can become physically dependent to it. People can be addicted to it. There's enough crossover in terms of where it goes in the brain and how it does its work. So I'd say tramadol should be treated with some degree of caution, and it has its own specific side effect profile as well.
Caller on the line, this is Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Go ahead.
Hi. Referring back to that previous caller, I took tramadol once, and it was produced such terrifying, disturbing nightmares that was the last time I'd even go near that drug. So. That's my experience with that. What I called about, however, is would you please discuss the synergistic effect of marijuana with opiates? I think you could keep your opiate dosage down by the combined effect of those two drugs. It's been very effective for pain treatment. And thank you very much for the program.
Thank you, John.
So we have cannabinoid receptors in our brain. And when they are stimulated by cannabinoids like marijuana, there is a number of effects, one of which is some degree of pain relief. And I think it's pretty clear there is probably a synergy between opioids and cannabinoids. It's, you know, obviously the discussion of the appropriateness of marijuana to treat chronic pain is much bigger than the science. And I would just say, yes, I think it's pretty clear. how prescribers deal with the fact that some people are smoking marijuana and they're getting pain pills is really something that's handled differently by different providers. And I think there's, you know, there's other side effects of marijuana that need to be considered when you think about the synergy. But synergistic effects with opioids is something that's very important to understand. There's people who drink alcohol and take opioids, people who take tranquilizers, benzodiazepines like Valium and Xanax. There can be some very serious side effects. I'm not implying that those serious side effects occur with marijuana, but we do need to realize these are powerful drugs. They interact with other drugs, and that's pretty important.
I wanted to ask a question about sort of dovetailing off of that worst-case scenario. If somebody is listening and they are addicted to painkillers, what are some things that can go terribly wrong with that? Physical things, what can kill you about that addiction? Let's put it that way.
Well, opiates are respiratory depressants. The more you take, the more it slows down your breathing. And what people generally die from is they just stop breathing. They just go to sleep and don't wake up. And so that's the problem. And I think that if your motivation is to make all your troubles go away or make all your pain go away, and you got a little alcohol here and a little Valium there and a whole bunch of pain pills, you can start maybe forgetting what you did, or you can be walking a very fine line between floating away for a while and floating away forever, and I think that becomes the problem.
Are there certain conditions that that are especially bad? Like I think I read somewhere that sleep apnea, for example, is you're already having trouble breathing.
Right. So now you're getting back to the assessment piece. If somebody has sleep apnea, if somebody is depressed or anxious or has PTSD, then they're more likely to get in trouble with the medications, either because they're going to overuse them or because their body can't handle it.
We're talking today about the overuse of prescription medications. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back in just a couple minutes. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. Today we're talking about prescription drug abuse and prevention efforts here in Southern Oregon, especially in the Rogue Valley. And our guest today, Dr. Jim Shames, the medical director for the Jackson County Health and Human Services, Dr. Ann Alftine, who is the director of clinical strategy for Jackson Care Connect. And we also have with us today Michelle Maricos, who is someone who experienced some addiction through painkillers and has now gotten off of that thanks to some alternative therapies and things to help her coping with the pain, which is one of the main purposes we're talking about here today. If somebody is addicted to an opioid or painkillers, how they can progress off of those things and get back to healthier lifestyle and being able to cope with that sort of thing. Dr. Shames, we were talking a little bit about CCOs, coordinated care organizations, and you mentioned that we've talked about one in particular, but there's actually two of them here in the area, aren't there?
Well, there's two in Jackson County, and throughout the state there are various CCOs. I think one of the exciting things that's happened around this work is that we've had wonderful collaboration between many community organizations, including our two CCOs here in Jackson County. So All Care is the other primary CCO here, and it's all the things that Ann said about Jackson Care Connect are absolutely true, and they've been wonderful to work with. And then other aspects of this problem, for example, helping us print up our guidelines for best practices, create a video, help us establish a website that people can go to, have been supported by All Care, and we're often sitting at the same table saying, "How can we help?" And it's a new day in terms of collaborating around healthcare for chronic conditions.
If you'd like to join our conversation today, you can give us a call toll-free at 1-800-838-3760 in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Michelle, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned you have these meetings that are going to start up at the YMCA in Medford on Wednesdays. I'm trying to phrase this the right way, an ongoing process for how you manage pain. What are the tools that you have, and how do you look at that in a long-term sort of scenario?
Long-term scenario, that's a good question. That once you have taken a few separate steps to realize that you have accepted that you're in chronic pain, that you are going to get off of the hamster wheel of doctor shopping, which is, you know, you can do it a variety of ways, but trying to get off the hamster wheel of, okay, I don't need to see A, B, C, and D doctors. I just need to sit with what I have accepted as the chronic pain and move forward and start kind of assessing what parts of your life are missing and trying to put the pieces back together. Because when you live with chronic pain, you don't realize that your life has fallen apart and you don't know how to get it back together. So just kind of in that one piece of getting back to being calm enough to realize that you need to start somewhere. And starting somewhere is that acceptance piece of, this is the way my life is. I need to move forward.
I want to ask you a question kind of generically, which is hard to answer. And specifically, you know, we're all different. But I don't know if in the interim, since you had your initial accident and went on the pain medication, if a person has to have some other type of medical procedure and the doctors are recommending acutely for a short period of time, we'd like to put you back on XYZ medication. Is that alarm bells for somebody like you? I mean, do you bring up the fact that, oh my gosh, I'd rather be in pain. I don't want to go back down that road. How do folks like you who've had that experience deal with that?
It is alarm bells. And I did actually have to go through that process in October. I had tapered off the medication in July. And then in October, I had a medical situation that had nothing to do with my chronic pain and was put back on opioids for a few weeks. And it was challenging. I didn't want to be in bed. I didn't want to be foggy. I had just gone through the process and worked through everything. And I didn't want to have to go through it all over again. So I was very conscious of the fact that this is an acute situation. It's not going to be forever. Just work with what you have to do to get over this situation, and then you can get back into your life and your program and all the things that you needed to be doing.
We've talked about assessment and support groups and alternative therapies and things like that to get off the opioids. Is there something out there like a buddy system where you can just call up and you have like a sponsor, if you want to call it that, or somebody that can help you out?
I would love that. I would love that. And I think that, you know, our support group, the peer-to-peer support group, is kind of the first step to that, of getting this list of people that want support. Because when you have chronic pain, you're so isolated. You become isolated from your friends, your family, from the community. You just are in pain and you just want to bury your head. So going out in public and sharing is not something you necessarily want to do, but it's something you need to do.
I was listening to a comedian recently, and he had to go in for a kidney stone or something, and they said, "What's your pain?" And he said, 7. And then the kidney stone didn't pass, and then he had to go back again to the hospital a few days later, and he says, "I learned that the correct answer is always 10 when they ask you what your pain is." And so, you know, I'm wondering how people's sensitivities to pain and how they cope with it, and if that can lead to some problems as well, I suppose.
Very much so. Very much so, because we all are sensing our pain in a different way. But when you come together in a group and, you know, it doesn't matter if you have kidney stones or I have some kind of spinal issue, that our pain is relative, that you have pain, I have pain. It doesn't matter if your pain is a 10 and my pain is a 5. We still are on the same plane that pain is relative. And I'm not going to one-up you, and you shouldn't be one-upping me with, oh, I've gone this and I've done this, and, oh, these doctors said I'll never be able to walk again. It doesn't – pain is pain in so many situations that, you know, when we're trying to support each other, it doesn't matter.
With opioids, is it easier for people to go cold turkey, or do you try to wean people off of those? What's a better strategy? Or, again, is that an individual?
Well, for folks that are truly struggling like Michelle was, on high doses, they knew something wasn't right, wasn't sure what to do. If you can, you know, bring the medications down relatively slowly, it's an easier course. In Michelle's case, she came down pretty quickly. You got off in 3 weeks, correct?
Yes.
So I guess it's everybody's a bit different. Some people can handle it, and some people really need a much more gentle approach.
Self-medication, people who, for whatever reason, can't doctor shop, or they don't have an uncle that's slipping them some leftover pain pills. What do people turn to and why? What illegal drugs are competing?
Well, first of all, there's so many pain pills out there. I mean, the fact that there's lots being prescribed means there's some people who don't take all that they're given. They can sell them. They can accidentally get them taken or stolen. But they're... We are awash in pain pills. They get to be fairly expensive. People who have a large habit, you know, taking 300 milligrams of oxycodone a day, you know, that can cost you hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And at some point, heroin's right around the corner, and it's cheaper. And it gets to your brain pretty quickly. And that's one of the reasons I think that people can get into trouble. What we're finding is as we start to get a handle on the overprescribing of pain medications, simultaneous to that, we're seeing a significant rise in heroin use. There's a lot more heroin in this community than there used to be. There's been a significant increase in heroin overdose deaths, not just in Portland, but in Jackson County as well. So that's happening.
Is that the downside? If you control the amount of prescription pain abuse, that you're suddenly opening the door, market factors here that people are going to start using heroin. How do you reduce that use of prescription pain medication while at the same time controlling things like heroin? Is there a good strategy for that?
Want to say something about the DOJ grant? Because I think this kind of works into that.
Sure. So I don't think it's an absolute given that people that are reducing their pain medications are going to go to selling or buying pain medicines on the street or into heroin. But there is a subset of folks that are truly addicted and desperate and look for any means necessary, I think, for that high. So what we're doing when I'm wearing a different hat is a Department of Justice grant that works with Jackson County Public Health, as well as the Department of Justice Partners in Corrections and the Drug Courts, the DA's office. And we're looking to form a committee to take a look at our community and what's the overlap between the medical community and the law enforcement and courts systems. And we know that since there are more and more pills being prescribed, there are more and more pills on the streets. And we know that the actions of the providers, well-intentioned, have effects in our law enforcement system. So we're beginning conversations to look at what are the places where we really need to be acting differently and coordinating things.
Is there a particular demographic that's susceptible to abuse or to taking these for too long? I mean, we talked about, you know, how as we get older, we all ache a little more, you know. And so I've wondered, is that something where the elderly become addicted, or is this something where kids in high school are getting these pills? Who's the demographic?
So probably Jim can answer this better than I can, but looking at the Jackson Care Connect data, we see spikes in drug dependence diagnoses in the 40 to 50-year-olds, men more than women, and then the 15 to 17-year-olds, which was a surprising finding for us, so that we know that there's a significant issue that needs to be addressed.
When you look at the overdose death data, both here locally as well as throughout the state and nationally, it's middle-aged white men is where the peak of overdose deaths is, 45 to 55-year-old men. Women are catching up pretty quickly. So in a broad swath, this overdose phenomenon is rural more than urban, white more than non-white, and men more than women.
Is a lot of this in rural areas what used to be called hillbilly heroin or whatever, oxycodone?
I think that's kind of the phenomenon, yeah.
And so the teenagers, are they getting it out of mom and dad's medicine cabinet?
I think in two places, yes. Mom and dad's, grandma and grandpa's, uncles and aunts' cabinets for sure. Friends, and as well as they're being prescribed as well. There's a lot of very active youth and high school age kids that are in a sport and get an injury and get prescribed a pain medication, an opioid medication. And for an acute injury, a broken bone, that's appropriate. For long-term use, it's not. And so these folks kind of start to like that pill, and some are susceptible to wanting to have more and more of that.
What's the next step? Where do we go from here? What are you looking to accomplish?
I think the next steps are education of all aspects of community so that the people doing the prescribing, the patients coming in with pain, and the community at large need to understand that we have new information around the treatment of chronic pain. We've learned things that everybody needs to share the knowledge of. So we are actively working on educating prescribers, making accessible to them appropriate guidelines, information about what's the best way to handle chronic pain. We have June 14th, there's going to be a community forum for everyone, the public. I believe it's going to be at Smullen, and it's going to be all day, and it's an opportunity to talk about this issue. We have a pain conference on May 8th and May 9th. We meet every month as the Opioid Prescribers Group. As I said, we have guidelines. So we're moving in many dimensions. And finally, what Michelle has been talking about is that we want to create opportunities for people to handle their pain, learn new techniques to help them manage their pain without being dependent on opioids. And we've had a lot of support from the CCOs, as we discussed earlier, to help set that up.
And to that point, Jackson Care Connect and All Care are looking forward to continuing to support these efforts. It's a critical need in our community.
We've been talking today with Dr. Dim Shames. He is the medical director of Jackson County Health and Human Services. Dr. Ann Alftine, who is the director of clinical strategy at Jackson Care Connect. And also, thank you, Michelle Maricos, for coming in and sharing your story today. Appreciate all of you being here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
You bet. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange, we'll be exploring trains and railroads, featured in a new All Aboard series in Josephine County. Then Ashland's Ed Polish joins us to share his sleazy listening project about what's being featured at this year's Codependent Film Festival. And at 9, kind of in relation to what we talked about today, Warrior Pose, a war correspondent's memoir. That's about someone who also had an issue with pain pills and was able to move beyond that. All that's coming up tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. I'm Milt Radford. Thanks for listening and have a great day.